You Forever by Tuesday Love Sang Grandpa, read to you by Blue Friend, August 2016. Lesson 8. In previous lessons, we have regarded the body as being the center of the etheric and the aura. We have moved from the body outwards, discussing the etheric, and then on to a description of the aura with its striations of color, and forward to the outer auric skin. All this is extremely important, and you are advised to go back and reread the previous lessons. For in this lesson, and lesson 1, we are going to prepare the ground for leaving the body. Unless you are clear about etheric and aura and the nature of the molecular structure of the body, you may run into some difficulties. The human body consists, as we have seen, of a mass of protoplasm. It is a mass of molecules spread out over a certain volume of space, in much the same way as a universe occupies a certain volume of space. Now we are going to go inwards, away from the aura, away from the etheric, and into the body, for this flesh body is just a vehicle, just a suit of clothes, the garb of an actor who is living out his allotted part upon the stage, which is the world. It has been stated that two objects cannot occupy the same space. That is reasonably correct when one thinks of bricks or timbers or pieces of metal. But if two objects have a dissimilar vibration, or if the spaces between their atoms and neutrons and protons are wide enough, then another object can occupy the same space. You may find that difficult to understand, so let us put it in a different way. Let us give perhaps two illustrations. Here's the first. If you get two glasses and you fill them right up to the brim with water, you will find that if you tip a little sand, say a teaspoonful, into one of the filled glasses, the water will overflow and will run down the side, showing that in this case the water and the sand cannot both occupy the same space, and so one has to give way. The sand, being heavier, sinks to the bottom of the water, thus raising the level in the glass to the point where the water overflows. Let us turn to the other glass, which also has been filled with water to the brim, filled to precisely the same level as the first glass. If now we take sugar, and we slowly sprinkle sugar into the glass, we find that we may be able to put even 6 teaspoonfuls of sugar into the glass before that water overflows. If we do this slowly, we will see that the sugar disappears. In other words, it dissolves. As it dissolves, its own molecules occupy spaces between water molecules, and thus it does not take up any more space. Only when all the spaces between the water molecules has been filled with sugar molecules does the excess sugar pile up on the bottom of the glass and eventually causes the water to overflow. In this case, we have clear proof that two objects can occupy the same space. Let us have another illustration. Let us look at the solar system. This is an object, an entity, a something. There are molecules or atoms which we call worlds moving about in space. If it is true that two objects cannot occupy the same space, then we could not send a rocket from the Earth into space, nor could people from another universe enter this universe, because if they did so, they would be occupying our space. So, under suitable conditions, it is possible for two objects to occupy the same space. The human body, consisting of molecules with a certain amount of space between atoms, also houses other bodies, tenuous bodies, precisely the same as to composition as in the human body. That is, they consist of molecules, but just as earth, or lead, or wood, consists of a certain arrangement of molecules, molecules of a certain density, spirit bodies have their molecules fewer and further between each. Thus it is quite possible for a spirit body to fit into a flesh body in the most intimate contact, and neither occupies space needed by the other. The astral body and the physical body are connected together by the silver cord. This latter is a mass of molecules vibrating at a tremendous speed. It is, in some ways, similar to the umbilical cord which connects a mother to her baby. In the mother, impulses, impressions, and nourishment flow from her to the unborn baby. When the baby is born and the umbilical cord is severed, then the baby dies to the life it knew before. That is, it becomes a separate entity, a separate life. It is no longer a part of the mother, so it dies as part of the mother and takes on its own existence. The silver cord connects the over-self and the human body, and impressions flash from one to the other during every minute of the flesh body's existence. Impressions, commands, lessons, and at times even spiritual nourishment can come down from the over-self to the human body. When death takes place, the silver cord is severed, and the human body is left like a discarded suit of clothes, while the spirit moves on. This is not the place to go into the matter, but it should be stated that there are a number of spirit bodies. We are dealing with the flesh body and the astral body at the moment. In all, in our present form of evolution, there are 9 separate bodies, each connected to the other by a silver cord. But we are concerned now more with astral traveling and matters intimately connected with the astral plane. Man, then, is a spirit briefly encased in a body of flesh and bones, encased in order that lessons may be learned and experiences undergone, experiences which could not be obtained by the spirit without the use of a body. Man, or the flesh body of man, is a vehicle which is driven or manipulated by the over-self. Some prefer to use the term soul. We use over-self because it is more convenient. The soul is a different matter, actually, and goes to an even higher realm. The over-self is the controller, the driver of the body. The brain of the human is a relay station, a telephone exchange, a completely automated factory, if you like. It takes messages from the overself and converts the overself's commands into chemical activity or physical activity, which keeps the vehicle alive, causes muscles to work, and causes certain mental processes. It also relays back to the overself messages and impressions of experiences gained. By escaping from the limitations of the body, like a driver temporarily leaving an automobile, man can see the greater world of the spirit and can assess the lessons learned while encased in the flesh. But here we are discussing the physical and the astral with, perhaps, brief mentions of the overself. We mention the astral in particular because, while in the body, man can travel to distant places in the twinkling of an eye. Man can go anywhere, at any time, and can even see what old friends or relations are doing. With practice, man, or woman, can visit the cities of the world and the great libraries of the world. It is easy, with practice, to visit any library and to look at any book or any page of a book. Most people think they cannot leave the body because in the Western world they have been so conditioned for the whole of their life to disbelieve in things which cannot be felt, torn to pieces and then discussed in terms which mean nothing. Children believe in fairies. There are such things, of course. Only we who can see them and converse with them call them nature spirits. Many really young children have what are known as invisible playmates. To adults, the children live in a world of make-believe, talking animatedly to friends who cannot be seen by the cynical adult. The child knows that these friends are real. As the child grows older, parents laugh or become angry at the idle imaginations. Parents who have forgotten their own childhood and forgotten how their parents acted even beat a child for being a liar or being over-imaginative. Eventually, the child becomes hypnotized into believing that there are no such things as nature spirits or fairies, and in turn, these children grow up, have families of their own, and discourage their own children from seeing or playing with nature spirits. We are going to say quite definitely that the people of the East and the people of Ireland know better. There are nature spirits, never mind if they're called fairies or leprechauns, never mind whatever they're called, they are real, and they do good work, and man in his ignorance and boastfulness in denying the existence of these people denies himself a wondrous treat and a marvelous store of information. For the nature spirits help those whom they like, help those who believe in them. There are no limits to the knowledge of the overself. There are very real limits to the abilities of the body, the physical body. Almost everyone on earth leaves the body during sleep. When they awake, they say that they have had a dream because, here again, humans are taught to believe that this life on earth is the only one that matters. They are taught that they do not go traveling around when asleep. So, wonderful experiences are rationalized into dreams. Many people who do believe can leave the body at will and can travel far and fast, returning to the body hours later with a full and complete knowledge of all they've done, all they've seen, and all they have experienced. Nearly anyone can leave the body and do astral traveling, but they have to believe that they can do this. It's quite useless for a person to put out repelling thoughts of disbelief or thoughts that they cannot do such a thing. Actually, it is remarkably easy to astral travel when one gets over the first hurdle of fear. Fear is the great break. Most people have to suppress the instinctive fear that to leave the body is to die. Some people are deathly afraid that if they leave the body, they may not be able to get back, or that some other entity will enter the body. This is quite impossible unless one opens the gate by fear. A person who does not fear can have no harm whatever happen to him. The silver cord cannot be broken when one is astral traveling. No one can invade the body unless one gives a definite invitation by being terrified. You can always, always return to your body just the same as you always awaken after a night of sleep. The only thing to be afraid of is being afraid. Fear is the only thing which causes any danger. We all know that the things which we fear rarely happen. Thought is the main drawback after fear, because thought, or reason, poses a real problem. These two, thought and reason, can stop one from climbing high mountains. Reason tells us that a slip will cause us to be cast down and dashed to pieces. So thought and reason should be suppressed. Unfortunately, they have bad names. Thought. Have you ever thought about thought? What is thought? Where do you think? Are you thinking from the top of your head or the back of your head? Are you thinking in your eyebrows or your ears? Do you stop thinking when you close your eyes? No. Your thought is wherever you concentrate. You think wherever you concentrate upon. This simple, elementary fact can help you get out of your body and into the astral. It can help your astral body soar as free as a breeze. Think about it. Reread this lesson so far, and think about thought. Think how thought has often kept you back because you thought of obstacles. You thought of unnamed fears. You may, for instance, have been alone in the house at midnight with the wind howling outside, and you may have thought of burglars. You may have imagined someone hiding behind a curtain ready to jump out at you. Thought here can harm. Think of thought some more. You are suffering from toothache, and reluctantly you go to see the dentist. He tells you that you have to have a tooth extracted. You are afraid it will hurt. You sit there in the dental chair in fear. As soon as the dentist picks up his hypodermic to give you an injection, you automatically wince and perhaps even turn pale. You are sure it's going to hurt. You are sure that you're going to feel that needle going in. And afterwards, there'll be that horrible wrench as your tooth comes bloodily out. Perhaps you are afraid that you're going to faint with the shock. So you feed the fear. you make your tooth hurt more and more by thinking and concentrating the whole of your thought power upon the sight of that tooth. All your energy is devoted to making that tooth ache more. But when you idly think, where is the thought then? In the head? How do you know? Can you feel it there? Thought is where you concentrate. Thought is within you only because you are thinking of yourself, and because you think, thought must be within you. Thought is where you want it to be. Thought is where you direct it to be. Let us look at thought is where you concentrate again. In the heat of battle, men have been shot or stabbed and felt no pain. For a time, they may not even have known they were wounded. Only when they had time to think about it did they feel the pain and perhaps collapse with shock. But thought, reason, fear are the brakes that slow up our spiritual evolution. They are but the weary clanking of the machine slowing down and distorting the commands of the overself. Man, when uncluttered by his own stupid fears and restrictions, could almost be a superman with greatly enhanced powers, both muscular and mental. Here is an example. A weakly, timid man with perfectly shocking muscular development steps off a sidewalk into a heavy stream of traffic. His thoughts are far, far away, perhaps on his business or upon what sort of mood his wife is going to be in when he gets home that night. He may even be thinking of unpaid bills. A sudden hoot from an approaching car and the prodigious leap which would normally be quite impossible for even a trained athlete. If this man had been hampered by thought processes, he would have been too late. The car would have knocked him over. The lack of thought enabled the ever-watching over-self to galvanize the muscles with a shot of chemicals, such as adrenaline, which made the subject leap far beyond his normal capability and indulge in a spurt of activity beyond the speed of conscious thought. Mankind in the Western world has been taught that thought, reason, distinguishes man from the animals. Uncontrolled thought keeps man lower than many animals in astral travel. Almost anyone would agree that cats, to just give one example, can see things that humans cannot. Most people have had some experience of animals looking at a ghost or becoming aware of incidents long before the human became so aware. Animals use a different system from reason and thought, and so can we. First, though, we have to control our thoughts. We have to control all those weary tag ends of idle thought which constantly creep past our minds. Sit down somewhere where you're comfortable, where you can be completely relaxed, and where no one can disturb you. If you wish, extinguish the light, for light is a drawback in a case such as this. Sit idly for a few moments, just thinking about your thoughts. Look at your thoughts. See how long they keep creeping into your consciousness, each one clamoring for attention. That quarrel with the man at the office, the unpaid bills, the cost of living, the world situation, what you would like to say to your employer, sweep them all aside. Imagine that you are sitting in a completely dark room at the top of a skyscraper. Before you, there's a large picture window covered by a black blind. A blind which has no pattern, nothing which could prove a distraction. Concentrate on that blind. First of all, make sure there are no thoughts crossing your consciousness, which is that black blind. And if thoughts do tend to intrude, push them back over the edge. You can do so. It is merely a matter of practice. For some moments, thoughts will try to flicker at the edge of that black blind. Push them back. Forcibly will them to go. Then concentrate on the blind again. Will yourself to lift it so that you may look out at all that is beyond. Again, as you gaze at that imaginary black blind, you will find that all manner of strange thoughts tend to intrude. They try to force their way into the focus of your attention. Push them back. Push them back with a conscious effort. Refuse to allow those thoughts to intrude. Yes, we are aware that we have said this before, but we're trying to drive the point home. When you can hold an impression of complete blankness for a short time, you will find that there's a snap as a piece of parchment is being torn. Then you will be able to see away from this ordinary world of ours and into a world of a different dimension where time and distance have an entirely fresh meaning. By practicing this, by doing this, you will find that you are able to control your thoughts as do the adepts and the masters. Try it. Practice it, for if you want to be able to progress, you must practice and practice until you can overcome idle thoughts. End of lesson 8.